Hey, this is Ken Barber from House Industries. You're listening to Type Radio.
What is your dearest possession?
Oh, wow. I guess kind of relationships in general. I mean, I know that's like very vague. You probably aren't looking for that.
No,
but
you can be
that's
vague.
Like really, yeah, that's very important. That's very dear because if I don't have that, then what the hell will anything else matter, I guess, you know, without those relationships, the relationship with my wife or family, you know, friends, that kind of thing. So that would be my dearest, if you can call it a possession, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of beautiful, actually.
I was going for poetic, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if that works for you, that's cool, yeah.
Okay, we'll keep it in. Are you afraid?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm afraid. It's weird. Being in New York, I lived here for a couple of years, so things like being in the city or a place that's quite different from where I live doesn't make me afraid, but I don't know. I don't want to get like, you know, sort of like profound or anything like that. Heaven forbid. I kind of think like as you get older, you know more dead people. You know what I mean? So you start to think like about mortality maybe a little bit more. But then you kind of like you don't really think about it. You're like, yeah, that happened to that person, but you know, I've got a lot of good years and all that sort of stuff. But then I really stopped and thought about it. But someone that I knew passed away, and his death was very public, I guess you could say. You know, he had cancer, and he chose he was treated for some time, but then he chose not to get the treatment and thought, you know, I just really need to face this with some and not struggle and face it with some dignity, and that's what he did, and he made it sort of very public. And again, I mean, I guess you could call him one of my heroes as well, to, you know, just sort of not just get doped up on painkillers and wait for the end type of thing, but really, you know, face it with some dignity and to the very end. And I guess I was sort of afraid in that sense, because then I realized, yeah, that's going to have to happen to me. So in one sense, I guess you could say I'm afraid, but also I think the things that I found in, I guess, my religious life or the sort of spiritual things I'm interested in is sort of helps me deal with those things as well. So kind of all comes full circle, I suppose.
And if you had a chance to do something else than what you're doing now, interview.
I always have a chance, right? I just don't take them. but what would I do if I had the balls and decided to do it? I don't know, you know, maybe just sort of, I still got to deal with the things I dig, you know what I mean? It's like, I like doing what I do to a certain extent, so could I do something else? I doubt it. You know, there'd still be that thing where I'd one way or another be coming back to what it is that I do. But I do think there's a point where I want to come and sort of do what I want to, I guess, I don't know, you could say like accomplish professionally or whatever. But at some point, I think I'd like to live a little bit more simply, maybe. My wife and I talked about, like, could we live in India or something, you know? Could we actually deal with that, you know? Because it's like growing up in the West, it's like, what do you mean you got no hot water and I got to take a crap in that hole, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like, where's the toilet, you know? If I were going to do something differently than I'm doing now, it maybe to live a little bit more contemplative life, maybe some like India, or maybe just some place a little bit more rural. We'll just sort of make it a little bit more vague like that.
Oh, that's a good one too.
We'll see.
We got such good questions.
We'll see.
Don't you think? Well, this one you'll really
okay.
like. What's the most beautiful word in any language?
Not in all languages, but
in any. Oh, you mean the sort of the idea?
No, but just one
just
word.
Something maybe with an L in it. I think that has a nice sound. You know? I don't know. The most beautiful word in any language. Hard to say. I mean, you...
We can come back to it if you want to.
Like. Yeah, well, maybe. I may not have a better answer for you there, but I don't know. Language, I really like language, and I think it's really beautiful. Like, I've always been interested in it, so I'm interested in hearing different languages And especially in New York, it's really easy, you know, because you hear a lot of folks and you're like, what the hell is that? Remember when I went out to dinner with my wife and her family, and there were people, I think they were like business folks next to us and conversing in some language. And, you know, the whole dinner conversation was like, okay, it's Germanic somehow. But what is it? Now, is it German? I don't think so. Maybe it's like a Scandinavian thing. We're not really quite sure. So I think it's like language is really beautiful. I like to... I like to hear it, but I'm not quite sure, you know, the most beautiful word. Or do you mean like a concept expressed in any language, or you mean like the sound of a particular word in
sound,
a particular language?
For sound.
I think things that flow. I mean, no offense to the German folks, but I don't really, to me, to my ear, it's not a very attractive kind of language. And
I think they know.
Really? I find it very attractive.
German?
Yeah, in comparison to Dutch.
That's your dark side?
Yeah, but see, yeah, that's where I was going next, was the whole Dutch thing.
Yeah,
you know,
the Dutch.
But then I thought, like, you know, I could be, like, burying myself here. I don't want to do that.
No,
but I find it, like, really interesting. Beautiful, I'm not sure. But then it's kind of all relative, right? I mean, it's just, like, it's just me. It's a subjective sort of thing. But I think Italian sounds, you know, very beautiful. The, like, Mediterranean languages sound really wonderful. Yeah, that would probably be, you know, that would be like, I'd have to start there and then kind of maybe like, you know, focus in from
Mediterranean
from there.
Sounds.
Yeah, like Italian, you know, like allora. It just sounds beautiful. You know, it's like, and you know, and that's just a common word. It's like, it's, I don't know. It sounds really pretty.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's the best I can give you.
Allora is a good pick.
Yeah.
Allora, is there somebody you really hate?
Is there someone I really hate?
Yes.
No. I mean, that's pretty strong. You know, someone, God, I sound like such a jerk. You know, this is like, God, this guy's like focusing on this person. Like, you know, no. I don't like, okay, I won't use hate, but I don't like George Bush. I mean, what's that guy? I mean, that guy's an idiot, but, you know, anyway. I'm American, so I can say that. I'm American.
Does money make the world go round?
Yeah, in many ways, sure. It's an aspect of it. But I don't really think, I wouldn't say that it's this sort of like, you know, the defining, you know, kind of factor that makes things happen. You know, it's like, maybe that's, relationships are so important in that sense. So I think once those things break down completely, then it doesn't matter how much money you have.
Yeah.
But you wish it weren't? It wasn't making the world go around?
Money? I wish it didn't have such a big role, you know, in it. But I don't see as that's really going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know, like, you hear the expression, you know, money is the root of all evil. But I think it's like, I think the whole thing is like the love of money is the root of all evil, right? So it's that kind of like, that kind of, you know, desire for something other than something that's really going to fulfill you in the end, that's kind of the problem, you know. So people, you know, they seek after that kind of stuff, and I don't think they find it in money, you know. It's like, do you find it in relationships, don't you? I mean, anyway.
Yeah.
God, I'm like getting on a theme here. I better
Maybe
move away from that. yeah.
Are you competitive?
Competitive?
Yeah.
No, man, I hate competition. I'm not. I mean, maybe like there's a part of me, sure, that's kind of like kind of competitive and feels that a little bit, you know, that kind of competition with another person. But no, I don't really like it. I never really did. And I don't compete like in many ways. Like I was never picked for sports and things like that in school, in that aspect of competition, because I never cared if we won or we lost.
Is that an excuse?
What do you mean? Oh, for my poor ability to like play sports or something like that? No, I was fully prepared to whoop underwear's ass in soccer this weekend.
Just
let
me elaborate
for
on
that.
This,
just to let you guys know.
For the listeners, we have this soccer competition planned for this TypeCon conference.
Yeah.
And it would be like underwear type radio against the House Industry guys, but Ken is here on his own, and we didn't feel it would be right to like just play 4-1.
Yeah. 4-1, okay.
But he's not competitive.
3-1. No, I will compete. But I may not feel like competitive in the sense that I feel that I've got to win. Oh, I knew I knew that House would prevail.
Oh,
in the football.
Oh,
you know,
course.
That's just, now we're talking like, we're just talking facts there. You know, that's a very black and white issue, you know. But no, I'm not.
Can I like sort of remind you of the fact where soccer came from? Like, what continent?
Yeah, actually, you know, there was this debate in the studio where like, we call it football because it does make a whole lot more sense. Plus, there's a real big football fan in the office, and it just pisses him off to no end for us to call it football. So, you know, that's always, you know, any way we can you know, piss off the guys in the office, especially Chris. Chris, if you're listening, football, real football, you and I know what it is, so we'll just leave it at that.
But are there people in the studio that are very competitive? I mean, is there...
With one another?
Yeah.
No, I really don't think so. Because in order to sort of do what we do effectively, we figured out that if we're competing with one another, then we're just going to hurt, you know, what it is we're trying to do, which is enjoy what we're doing, maybe make a little money at it. And anybody that's competitive, there hasn't been anyone in the studio that's been competitive with one another. Because the way we work is a job will come to the studio somehow or other, and everyone has input. So if, you know, if Andy comes in, and it happens all the time, actually, and he's like, Ken, that looks like hell. That looks like shit. What are you doing? You know, and I look at it and I'm like, yeah, you know, and I'm having a tough time with this or that or the other. It's like, I don't know. I don't take it personally, you know, because I trust the guy. I trust him. Yeah.
And so, you know his intentions, like to make the work better.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not about me, you know, and it's not about him. It's about what we're trying to do. So I don't know. I don't think there's that element of competition and the kind of thing where we try to maybe put one another down or outdo one another or anything like that. So in the office, definitely not. It's just like, hey, we all want the best product. We argue. There's no question about it. We argue, we'll fight with one another. I mean, it doesn't get, you know, no fisticuffs or anything like that. You know, there's no brawling going on.
You don't have a boxing ring, like, on one side.
No. I mean, there's a timeout corner. Somebody gets a little worked up. You're going to have to think about...
You have a special hat for that?
We want you to sit on the stool, the naughty stool. Think about what you've done. Take 15 minutes, reflect. No, I mean, we argue over things. It never... But we respect one another. So it's like we know that whatever, wherever we're coming from, it's valid to some degree, and we accept that, and we recognize it. But a choice has to be made. It has to move in some direction. So, like, generally, Andy, who's a creative director, like, I trust his vision. I think the guy has a very solid idea of, like what's happening and what he sees. And I think it's better to sort of trust one vision in one sense than to kind of have this, like, weird, convoluted thing just because I need to express myself as an individual. But what's that going to do if the final product is shite? You know what I mean?
Do you sing? Can you sing?
Yeah, I sing.
Can you sing us a song? You saw it coming.
Yeah, oh man. This is embarrassing.
You don't have to. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
Yes, he does.
He does?
He does.
Well, you have to.
Oh, man. Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murare He Nata Narayana Vasudeva. Sorry. That's
just... Yes, what is that?
Yeah. It's actually a folk song from India, and it's in praise of Krishna. Okay. And it's actually just more or less composed of his different names. So that's the kind of singing I do most often. So that's the kind of singing I like. Yeah.
So you don't sing with Ed, for example, when you're into it?
No, but that guy, see, he's I don't know if he shared it, and maybe I shouldn't, but he comes from a very strong religious background, and his father was a preacher, and his father's father was a preacher, and there's a very strong musical sort of tradition in his religious practice. And
he said he
sings.
Was in a choir.
He was young, he sang in a choir, and my wife and I have had dinner with him a number of times, and when he says grace, he sings it. And we were just like, my wife and I, you know, we're kind of bowing our heads, and we're across the table from one another, and of course Ed is at the head of the table, sort of like have our eyes closed, and he starts singing, and you know, kind of my eye pops open and my wife's eye pops open. We kind of look at one another and we're like, wow, this is pretty awesome, you know? It's like, where did this come from? Nobody does this, you know? So that, yeah, he's really a singer. And he just makes up songs and, yeah, it's like a big, big thing for him, which is totally cool, which is this whole part of his personality, which is really interesting.
So you were having some conversation with Ed Ronthorne, because we interviewed him last night. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 100 years old with such a load of history. It's incredible. So what are you doing with him?
Well, he started photo lettering in 1936, and he was like in his 30s at the time, right? He would have been 31, something like that. So he's kind of helped make the transition, I should say, from metal type, you know, from real type, those bits of metal that they compose, to make typography. And he more or less helped that transition, I think, from three-dimensional to two-dimensional. And he used a photo technology to achieve that. And that was kind of a significant but often overlooked part of typographic history. So he started photo lettering, and they amassed these, for lack of a better term, these alphabets. And when the digital era came in, photo lettering sort of phased out and they more or less folded. But there's such a treasure trove of these lettering styles. And we were always impressed by it and influenced by it. And in 2003, we were able to actually purchase the collection from the former owners of the photo lettering library. So we decided that in order to kind of, I guess, give proper respect to it and also make it useful, we thought we should sort of maybe take it a step forward and kind of in the tradition of photo lettering. So we decided to introduce photo lettering again, kind of with the, you know, within the digital realm, and we're going to vend headlines in a similar way that they did, but in using the sort of technology today in order to make some other things happen in color and multi-layers and, you know, all sorts of like really fun stuff. So Ed has been, I guess, for maybe a lack of a better term, you know, he's definitely been a mentor, a hero, consultant, but that's kind of like, you know, doesn't really do him justice. But we've been sort of working with him in that way, and we're trying to chronicle the history of photo lettering, and he's been, you know, really agreeable and really happy to help us do that. So we've been just talking to him about what we intend to do and what he thinks of it, and if he could share more information about photo lettering, maybe things that he's left out of his biography or other sources that we can kind of fill in, you know, hopefully as much of the picture as we can. So that's been our involvement with Ed Ronthaler. Amazing guy.
And Ed Bangat?
Well, Ed's always been a hero, too. I mean, he's done a lot of typefaces and logo types, pieces of lettering that we've always appreciated. And to work with him, we started working with him with some House Industries products. We did the Ed Bangat typeface or font collection most recently. We released that last year, actually. So it's with him, he's been another hero, someone we've always appreciated his work. And when we had the opportunity to work with him, we certainly took it, and it's been great. I mean, our relationship has been, you know, and it's not just business, you know, he's such a great guy, and it's been a really friendly relationship as well. So I look forward to continue to working with both Eds.
And John Downer is also the...
John's been someone that, you know, has again been a mentor, and we've all learned so much from John, and he's just an amazing artist, type designer, but also an amazing sign painter, and you know, and he knows so much about all those different lettering traditions, and from show card writing, sign painting, all those sorts of things. And so he's been highly influential and is a very respected figure in the house circles. And of course, he's just released, because I got to get the plug in here, just released a paperback through House Industries. And you can go to www.houseindustries.com.
Plus, he's got an amazing chest size.
I'm sorry?
Chest size.
Yeah. The guy's buff. Guy works out. He's like a...
You can tell.
He swims. I mean, he plays water polo. And I think, yeah, he played. Yeah, yeah. So.
And the illustration, yeah, that was very good.
It doesn't do him justice, actually. I mean, you don't really... No. You know, it's like... It's much more impressive, actually, when you see... I'm sure he's flashed his chest for you yesterday.
Almost larger.
Almost. Almost.
Almost larger than life, actually. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.